Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I am Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. We're on a holiday. We're working a holiday today.
Yep, we are. We're hard workers.
Because we can't work tomorrow, I guess.
Well, or you can't. It's like Boxing Day. We don't take off on the main holidays because, you know, it's the day after we take off. So this is Memorial Day of 2014 today, right? And we figured we might as well spend some time, of course, sending out our well wishes to everyone who's all helped to make us safe and all the families who have, in the past have been involved in the military and, of course, give them their kudos for what they do. But also, you know what? We just felt like, you know, we got to do the show. We got to do it. No?
Well, we didn't do it last week, so we have to do something.
Yeah, we do. Lots of things going on, my friend. Lots of tech news. Listen, the S&P, first of all, hit a record of 1,900 for the first time on Friday.
Wow.
Yep, on the lowest volume of the year.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And the volume has been creeping lower and lower the last several days, which is...
Maybe when they have zero volume, the thing will skyrocket.
Yeah, it's going to be 20,000, the S&P. No volume. We have one share traded today. The S&P is now at 50 million. But, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the flow of funds, I did an analysis earlier in the week, took all the ETFs that are out there, and they're very good representation of the actual indices. And you can see by the flow of funds, the money into and out of the ETFs. So you take all the ETFs, we split the domestic equities from the domestic fixed income, from the international equities, and split it all up. And if you add up all of the money that goes into these versus out, you can see what's happening, right? Where the money's flowing. So now we have, let me find this here. Oh, what do I do with it? Here we go. Excuse me. All right. So what we have is that over the last several weeks, there's been an actual net outflow of money, or withdrawals, if you will, from domestic equities, while the S&P is reaching a new high. And please don't ask me to explain that.
That's very strange.
Yep. Money's pouring into international equities for the last 7 weeks. No, actually, 1, 2, 3. For the last 14 weeks, there's been positive inflows. Now, what's really interesting is while there's outflows from the domestic equities, the domestic fixed income has been seeing more inflows than we've seen in a while. As a matter of fact, last week, we had about $5.5 billion flowing into domestic fixed income or bonds. This is in the face of a supposedly, you know, through earnings season and through things getting better, sentiment increasing, getting better, and the domestic equities moving higher. We're seeing that bonds are being bought as well. Now, that's really weird. You don't usually see that.
No, it's baffling.
So, not sure what that exactly means, but...
It seems like we're some sort of a top.
We're at a top. It's some topping action. I think the international equities is all about... first of all, you saw that Draghi continues to talk about how he's going to do something, whatever it may be, in June.
Yeah, if they do some easing, I think that would help those stocks a lot.
Right, so that's good. You see that there was elections in India. We'll talk about that in a second, what's going on there. And that market's going ballistic and berserk and crazy. So there's a lot of odd things going on there. But we're also seeing some realization finally come into the market, at least temporarily. In that there was, I sent this to you, the front page of the Bloomberg Business Week this week discussed about IBM. I thought the pictures were great, and if you look at the online version of this, is a picture of what's her name, Jeannie Rometty, right?
Yeah,
she's got the picture is it's an animated GIF, and it's with her big face, or, you know, it's a kind of a tall picture, if you will, mostly from the, we'll call it the neck up, or so, and it has her holding an umbrella and just rain pouring on her, and her just trying everything she can to hold this thing up, you know, not get wet from it. And they talked about in there exactly what you and I have been talking about, which is that what is this company right now? And, you know, look at how IBM actually is increasing their earnings per share over the last several years. And it's all about financial engineering. And in fact, if you look through the most recent earnings report, there was something like 200 different sightings of the word non-GAAP. So not according to generally accepted accounting principles. Non-GAAP accounting that went on to gather whatever number it was. So each data point, like there's maybe a little star or a little number one footnote, right? Non-GAAP, 200. About 3 years ago, there were none. So they're doing something a little funny.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. But, and I think there's also, you see that the stock did go.
You know, no one's bitching about the stock price.
Well, the stock price has been moving down a bit.
Yeah, but it's still way too high.
Yeah, it's like 188, I think, or so, 187. But yeah, no, it's very fascinating that they're going to continue to target their, I think 2015, they had a target of $20 per share or something of that nature of earnings. But again, how they're getting there with selling off companies, with the fact that they're under major attack. You know, one of the big things that IBM had was their cloud initiative, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, the cloud's the next thing for us and all that. But meanwhile, Google and Rackspace and Microsoft and everybody's, you know,
cut their prices.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cut their prices tremendously. As a matter of fact, one of the things in that article talked about was how they lost, how IBM lost a major contract. What was it? The CIA, I think, right? Or the defense.
Yeah, Amazon ended up with that, I think.
Yep. Amazon ended up with that. And there was a lot of discussion about why IBM's number was just, you know, off and how there was a lack of, I don't want to say lack of trust, but a lack of faith in IBM executing. So IBM is, I think everybody should go out and just look up IBM Bloomberg Business Week. I thought it was a great article to really talk about what we had talked about for some time.
Yeah, I think we've been talking about this for over a year.
Yep. So do you have Tech Neck, by the way?
Tech Neck. No, that's bull crap.
What is that about? I read an article, I'm thinking
it's
I had to put
bull crap. It's just your bending neck, because people are always, I have to say, everybody is spending too much time on their smartphones. They're either yakking on them, yak, or they're looking at stuff, or they're texting all the time, all day.
Yeah, all day. And this is what they're calling tech neck, because it happens when you look down at the iPhones or your smartphone or your laptop too often, which may cause etched lines, wrinkles, double chins, and loose skin to occur.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So
sounds like bull crap to me, but right. Okay.
You didn't ever get like...
Maybe you should hold the phone over your head and use that and do it that way.
Yeah, or we never had this problem with newspaper neck or fiction book neck, you know, where you'd be looking down at a book and reading it for too long. Nobody ever talked about that.
No, I don't know how they missed it.
That's stupid. Continuing on with technology, HPQ, Hewlett Packard came out with some earnings last week. And they had another quarter of declining sales. I don't think that's a big mystery. Meg Whitman is saying, oh, we're still in our turnaround here. And one of the things we're going to do is, hey, you know what? We're going to fire another 16,000 employees.
On top of that many?
Yep, 16,000 on top of.
16 or 60?
16. Teen.
Well, still a lot.
Yeah, 16,000 on top of the 34,000 they already announced.
So yeah, that would make a total of, what, 50?
Yeah, 50. So the shares actually moved lower.
What are they doing with 50,000 employees, which would have to have been earmarked as deadwood? Seems like an awful lot to me.
It is amazing, actually, if you think about it. 50,000 employees.
That they can do without.
They can just do without, and not saying they're shutting down a particular sector. But, you know, you think about that. What are all these people doing now? Besides looking down at their smartphones.
Not much. Not much to help the company make money.
Yeah. Getting... Also, maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's just a massive. Maybe what she realized was that they have just an amazing amount of claims for TechNeck. And she went forward with this and said, you know what? Maybe what's happening, we don't need these people because they're not doing anything for us. Possibly. Stock went up about 7% on the news.
Yeah. Well, that will make a difference in the bottom line.
Yeah. But again, another financial engineering trickery, although. Reality that they're letting these people go, of course, but the cost of human capital being so great with the cost of benefits and time off and all the things that go on with it, it just also amazes me that if they're involved in a turnaround, what it tells me is that they are not talking about any kind of major breakthrough of any new technology being competitive in terms of in the marketplace, right? Because this has nothing to do with that. This is just only has to do with expenses.
Yeah.
And in fact,
I mean, at least that's the way they're making it look. I mean, they you're right. They haven't done anything else. There's not like they said, well, we're killing our such and such division, or we're going to stop making something here and there. No, they just, I don't know what these, it's weird.
Yep. So that's going on there. Now, Samsung Electronics is continuing on their journey, trying to make some kind of a smartwatch now. And, you know, they've been doing some interesting things in the area of technology, although they're still also having a major problem with profitability, Sony being the worst in terms of I'll tell you why the problem with Sony is. I have a Sony camera, a little point-and-shoot.
Yeah?
Yeah. And, you know, there are several different charger plugs, you know, where you can plug a USB in to charge a phone or a device right. of some
Most
sort.
Most people
or,
have kind of agreed on the little long and thin one, the sideways, little long and thin right. one, the ones that's used on most cell mobile phones. Also, a lot of the cameras now are using that as a connector.
Right. And that is the next after they came up with a more squarish one, right?
Well, where there's a square one, and then there's the one with the little loops on the outside, little eyeballs on the outside, little frog eyes. That one. There's a bunch of them. I think I've documented about six of these things. But the one that's everyone's standardizing on now is that thin one because you can keep a small form factor without having you can have a thinner phone and still have this connector without it bulging out.
Right. Well, Samsung has one very similar to that, but not that.
So why would they choose not? Because my Galaxy phone or whatever one it is, my Nexus phone, which is made by Samsung, uses that the good connector.
Actually, if I said Samsung, I meant Sony. Sorry, Sony.
Okay,
Sony. So it has this device that kind of looks like that.
Well, Sony is like non-standard memory. They made a memory stick, and they always have. Sony is like there's a couple of these Japanese companies. Like I think Olympus is in the same league. They just have to do little things. They think they're going to nickel and dime the customers to death, and they have non-standard connectors and other screwy ideas that are just dumb.
Right. Well, I this particular connector, because it's the only one of its kind, seems to disappear on me all the time. I don't know why. It's just somebody. It's like it's like the socks in the laundry. This connector just disappears. So I try to I tried to get it because I was taking some pictures of my son's prom, and I thought I'd use a decent camera instead of just the iPhone this time.
Right, you were bragging about that Sony
camera
about a year ago.
I love it. I hate the charging part of it, but I love it. So I went to Radio Shack thinking, but in the back of my head the whole time I'm thinking, I feel like I've done this before. I just feel like I've done this. So I go to Radio Shack. They don't have it. They don't even sell those. Remember the multi-connector deals, like something iGo or something like that?
Right. You could buy a little kit, and yeah. You'd have all these different nibs on the end.
Right.
You could swap them out.
Couldn't even find anything like
Belkin
that.
Belkin still makes something similar, but they still haven't got – they only got three or four of the six or seven of these things. But anyway.
Right. So then I want to buy – so now the big – usually there's a pretty big guy that works in Radio Shack. You know what I mean? If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're always large. I don't know what it is, but nothing against big guys, okay? But do you have the no? Oh no, we don't have it. Do you have a battery charger? Let me see the battery. So I pull up the battery. He's going nothing at all. He said, "Well, maybe we can make this work." It's like $50. Like, I'm not spending $50 on a battery charger. So I knew a friend that had it, and I got it. But how annoying is that?
Yeah, you have to get – well, the battery should be chargeable in the camera with the standard connector. That's right. The way everyone's gone.
Right.
And which is even Kodak has done that with their – after going bankrupt, their camera, they've standardized things. They've used to have some non-standard stuff, and now it's all this thin connector. It just baffles me because, you can buy probably a charger for that Sony battery online shipped straight from China for maybe $6-$7. So in the end of the day, and you can probably buy the USB cable, again, direct ship from China for about $5 maybe. So at the end of the day, I don't know what Sony thinks they're accomplishing here. They're not going to get a sale for a $50 charger or anything else. They're not going to make anything. All it's going to do is just create ill will.
It did. I just get pissed off every time. I don't know if they changed it on their new cameras and their new devices, but...
Doubtful.
Yeah, yeah. So, and no wonder why they're having so much trouble. They've had a lot of trouble there. But anyway, Samsung now is making another run at the, well, the wrist communicator. Plans to unveil a smartwatch that finally, by the way, finally is a standalone in the next few months. I still have problems with this, right? So the ones you get now, like the Pebble and all these, they have to be synchronized with your device of some sort.
Yeah, I want to mention that at least maybe up to 5 years ago, you could get standalone watch phones from China. Again, you'd go to Alibaba, you could look them up, and there's all these manufacturers, these little guys who are making these types of devices. It's a standalone watch phone that you stick a, I guess you'd have to stick a Bluetooth in it or something, or you have to be attached to a Bluetooth, but it's not a new idea. I'm actually stunned it's taken so long to come to market anywhere, you know, in a big way.
Well, the problem is that they've stuffed so much into, well, first of all, the new Samsungs, right? You know, the Galaxy table mat, whatever that thing is called, with the, it's, you know, you see people on it, you're like, wow. It's like, is that, are you talking on an iPad mini or something? How is that working? It's gigantic.
Yeah, I think it's awkwardly big.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's great, by the way. I'm sure it's, you know, it does everything, and it's, you know, hoping to grab up the market from those people that don't want to have two devices, but it's enormous. So, on the opposite end of things, the watch is so small, there's not much you can do with it. I mean, it's just not much you can do with this thing. You know, we need one of those that, like you see in these sci-fi movies, it kind of goes, it's like a wrist guard you'd have if you were doing a bow and arrow tournament.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, to keep you from getting
Yeah, you need about that size. You know, kind of one of those things. And you have a couple of wraps on either side, and you turn your wrist in. You could kind of type with three fingers of your other hand. You know what I'm talking about? And have it kind of like that.
Yeah, it's another thing we don't need. But yeah. I think, we should go ahead with that.
I'm going to work on that. I actually have a blueprint for it. Flexible screens now that are now available. I think it's going to be very, very popular. I really do. Either that or built into my suit. A sleeve somehow. Anyway, I just think they're kind of small. The idea is great, right? You know, to have this thing that you know it's another device you don't need, so don't take your phone, but take this smartwatch thing. But then you got issues about the headset that goes with it and all that. Whatever. Now I want to tell you something, buddy boy. We missed something. Oh, did we miss something? We're usually pretty good on trends, right? I mean, you know, we talk about things and we talk about some of the trends that are going on, and maybe because we're so involved in technology / you know, the markets and the obvious that we just missed this. Now, one of the things you know is that we've kind of been a little bit upset about Tiger Woods. Is, you know, he had his problems, and then, you know, we've noticed that there really wasn't any major players that came up, a couple here and there. But then Tiger Woods is, you know, obviously going to be, he slowed down his playing, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? In golf?
Yeah, he's backed off.
Yep. Well, wait and think about how that would really affect the golfing industry. Because a lot of the big drive, so to speak, into golfing was, you know, all about following Tiger Woods, right? And following what he did. He was just amazing. And it really, it brought the attention of a lot of younger players. And it really was something that people wanted to be involved in. So it's like any other sport, right? That you can play.
Well, I think we already saw the progenitor of this sort of thing with the bicycling.
Right.
A lot of people bailed out because everyone was, you know, essentially all done the juice.
Right. Well, we didn't catch this. And yeah. Because what ended up happening is companies like Dick's and Callaway Golf, and as a matter of fact, Edwin Watts, you know that golf store?
No, I don't know that golf store at all.
Okay, it's a golf store that is in a variety of places, and you know, they sell golf equipment, and you go in there, and they have whatever you need, and, you know, you get fitted, and you go at the simulator and kind of take your stick and they tape it up and you can swing it and see if it's a good thing and if you like it, and they get out of business. And look at, like, take a look at the chart on ELY, which is Callaway Golf. Let's see what that looks like. ELY. Yeah, it was up at 40 and now it's at $8. 1998, it was at 40. But still, it was above
$20. That's a while ago.
All right, so it was still.
It looks like this collapse happened a lot sooner than, I mean, it looks like this collapse happened way before Tiger Woods' things collapsed. When did he fall off the, because it was up at 40, close to 40, it looks like 96, 97. Tiger Woods' scandal, when did that begin? And then it looks like it really dropped off in 2010 when he stopped playing.
Right, that's probably when it happened.
Well, let's see.
I think Callaway was the big Bertha. Wasn't that their stick they had?
A fair. They. No, I don't know if they may.
I think you need fares. Fares.
Fares. Fares. Here's the. The Wikipedia should have this info. Okay. Born in 75. Personal life.
Wow.
Big, a lot big of that. Age.
Wow. Yeah.
Goes on forever.
I'll look this up. Tiger Woods. You do look at it. Oh, goodness. Tiger
First,
Woods.
Here it is. Here it is.
Okay.
He got engaged in 2003.
Okay.
And then they were introduced. And then he ran off with, let's see, infidelity is in 2009. So the 2009 is when the National Enquirer rolled this out. So let's take a look at the chart. It was November 25th. So 2009, where Callaway is around 15, it looks like. Just to be, I guess it was as high as 18. It's still way down from 40 during the Tiger Woods fiasco. And then it fell like a rock down to 4 or 5. I guess $5 has hit bottom. And then it's been bouncing back around and hit 10 again. But no, this is I think this thesis of yours is incorrect.
Oh. Really? So what but there's a big
Well, you got to figure out what happened in 1990 looks like 97 that caused the initial collapse of the stock.
Okay, how about this? When did Jack Nicklaus retire? Yeah.
Let's see.
I'm just throwing that out there as an idea.
Yeah, you might be onto something there. Let's check it out.
Oh, remind me. I can tell you about
it. He definitely was a Nicholas. Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus. Nicknamed the Golden Bear.
Yep.
25 years. He retired. Let's see when he retired. I mean, I think he played in the seniors tournament for a while. 67, 70, 77, resurgence. Looks like he retired around. Well, he's still winning. 85, we're up to 85, 86. Wins his sixth Masters at the age of 46 in 1986. Close of is. The final U.S. Open was at Pebble Beach in 2000. That was it.
2000.
And he missed the cut.
Yeah.
So 1999, 2000, which goes 1990. Yeah, well, you know, it looks like it. Man, Nicklaus could be part of the what happened.
Yep. And by the way, speaking of stocks of sports type of things, remember you had a stock that really did well. Remember that World Wrestling Federation thing?
Yeah.
Have you looked at the stock lately?
No.
Absolutely imploded last week. Imploded.
Oh. What's the symbol?
WWE. I mean, imploded.
Well, we were out of it, of course, because of our theories.
I picked up a little bit of this thing on the fact that they were going to renew their contract, and there's a good buzz about it. Next day, it was down 47%.
Yeah, it dropped like a rock.
Oh, yeah. Dropped like a rock. Oh, I see. Aha!
That's good. It went from 20 to 11 just like overnight.
Yep.
And it was on its way up. It was, I think, after we picked it up, and it was just... It moved nicely up when we had it, and then it went up higher. I think we were out of it before it even went up to the peak.
Oh, this thing got pinned hard,
slammed. <Yeah. laughs>
Anyway, I mean, some people are saying this, it's overdone. They still have a contract. Maybe something interesting to look at. I mean, this thing really, you know. And then there was the big issue right now was in a conversation they had on Wednesday or Thursday, or maybe it was Tuesday of last week, was that, hey, you know what, is the dividend now still solid? Big issue about that because they're going to a different plan from the pay-per-view to subscription. They really got to start doing a whole bunch of new type of marketing to get this thing up because even though the deal they had put together and with the various television stations, et cetera, it's just something just got a little funny there. So take a look at that. Now, speaking about crazy things, the SEC came out with an investor alert for marijuana-related investments last week.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah, they said that they've seen a rise in the number of investor
clients. We're doing okay.
Right. There's a rise of investor complaints regarding, this was interesting, regarding.
Where's my money? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. They did temporary trading suspension of several different companies, Fusion Pharma, Cannabis Business Group, Grow Life, Advanced Cannabis Solutions, and Petrotech Oil and Gas, which I'm not sure what.
What's Petrotech Oil and Gas got to do with it?
I have no idea. I thought that was interesting also. Is it hemp-based fuel?
I don't think so.
It was in the story, and I just thought I'd put it there with it. I have no idea. Unless it's the name of it, and it was kind of the name of the company, and they didn't change it, but it was a shell. But
oh, that could be a reverse merger.
Yeah, something like that. Here's what's interesting about this.
PTOC? What's
PTOG. G.
P-T-O-G. Wow. It's one penny. Whoops. Yeah. It just dropped as I watched it down to 0.006.
Wow, and the market's not even open. How great is that?
Yeah, it's astonishing.
So, but what's interesting about this is they said
penny stock. I had to get some of this.
So, what's interesting in this is that there was a complaint regarding this. Then there was the follow on to the story was that, you know, if they're not registered and this and that, I'm thinking, what do you mean they're not registered? Many of these companies are registered, and there were some complaints about possible scams. Now, if you're going to be investing in marijuana stocks and the people that are running this are dealing, so to speak, marijuana related products, it is possible. It is possible that maybe there's some hanky-panky going on. But still,
let me read you something here. Petrotech Oil and Gas, they had, according to this article, they've been raised about accuracy and adequacy of publicly disseminated information concerning, among other things, the company's operations. Petrotech is an oil and gas company that recently began expanding into the quasi-legal marijuana industries in Colorado and Washington.
Right.
And by the way, they're not quasi-legal. I don't know who wrote this. Interesting. That's on the cheat sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now, a company that's trying to, you know, it's like one of those guys, you know, he owns the pawn shop and then he decides to sell moose heads and junk jewelry because he sees somebody else making money. So it sounds like a flaky operation.
Right. So, you know, with this and with the fact that marijuana is becoming much more common in terms of legalities around the country, what's interesting is this is a serious story. I'm not kidding about this. It is absolutely, I'm not sure even how to comment on this because it's frightening to me. It really is. Am I kidding? Italy recently said, just on Friday, this is a Bloomberg report that came out, they're going to begin including prostitution income and illegal drug revenue, you know, from the various underworld into their GDP. I'm not even kidding.
Well,
I have so many questions about this.
It is part of GDP if you think about it,
but it's not part of GDP on a apples to apples basis with the rest of the world.
Ah, true.
So this is kind of shadow stats kind of stuff, right? That's where you may want to look at that, where some of that comes in. But if they do that because they're trying to goose their GDP, of course. So you have, first of all, here's the questions I have, and maybe you can help me with this. You're a smart guy. If they can include these numbers into GDP, which you would hope that the way they get their numbers from GDP, the various components of it, if you want to talk about manufacturing and retail sales and all the different things that go into it, right?
Yeah.
You get it from where? From receipts, from reports, from studies, from things. Who's putting, are they going to go poll the dealers? Are you going to have, hey, you know what? Hey, babes.
Hey, babes.
I can't, it's Friday. I got to put in my report. It's pimp reporting day, and they're going to start putting in their report. I mean, how does that work?
It has to be estimated.
And if it's estimated, and if they're doing it just to increase their GDP, therefore it's absolutely bogus. They can do whatever they want.
Well, now you've made a good point. Yeah, you could be flex numbers.
Yeah, exactly. To be, you know what? Oh, we're down 0.2. You know what? Let's bring it up so at least it's even. The biggest component was that it was a very rainy season. A lot of depression. A lot of men and went out to get prostitutes, and there was just a tremendous amount of income in the area of prostitution. I mean, how about this? Italy, number one country for concerts. And due to that, GDP up 3% on heroin sales. I mean, what is this?
Okay.
It's the stupidest thing ever. And they're going to world's going to let them get away with this.
Well, we'll see.
Italy had
what comes of it.
After the elections, there was elections around the world. We saw Ukraine elections. We saw a variety of European area elections. And what was interesting was that the parliamentary elections in Europe showed a lot of anti-EU, anti-austerity, and far-right parties won really big in a variety of countries, in France and Greece and in Italy. And Italy's stock market moved up 3.6% just today.
And probably, I don't know what to say.
Well, it's probably, I'm sure they're going to celebrate, and that's going to bring up their GDP also. It's going to be also to parties.
Every party is part of GDP.
Every party. Hey, you know what? Hey, guys, do me a favor. Go out, drink, do some blow, get some hookers.
Some blow.
I'm just saying. It's just the stupidest thing. Anyway, the old-fashioned way is the way you want to do it. What you want to have where there's creativity, you want to have innovation. And you know what? One of the best ways to do that is for you yourself to be one of the innovators. You can do that through the Stanford Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate Program. It's a professional education program designed to help you in the quest to develop innovative products, services, and organizations. And it's taught by a Stanford Graduate School of Business and School of Engineering faculty member. The course is 100% online, so you can work at your own pace. This is great stuff. You know what I mean? You could do this, and if you're maybe working, but in your evening hours, weekends, right? You could work online, do this.
Well, I'll tell you that right now, Stanford probably has the absolute best staff to do this in so far as money making high tech's concerned.
Right.
Almost most of these companies, if you check out the CEOs and all the rest of them, these startups are all, they're all related to Stanford.
Right. You can learn to think differently about your business with new business frameworks and insights from successful entrepreneurs. You can join an international network of innovators, and all you have to do, you just have to check it out. You can check out the free webinar, Scaling Up Without Screwing Up, hosted by academic director and New York Times bestseller Bob Sutton. That's going to be an ongoing thing. You can see the replay that was recently was there, and they have ongoing webinars. And if you want to check all the things out, just go over to ideas.stanford.edu. Use the coupon code podcast when you register for your first course and get a 10% off. Or you can call 650-741-1596. Stanford Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate Program. Awesome stuff. Thank you, Stanford.
I wonder if they could send us one gratis.
Well, that would be interesting.
Seems unlikely.
No, sorry.
Anyway, okay.
Now for the sad news. Windshield washer fluid.
Yeah, I knew you were going to bring this up.
The windshield washer fluid sprayed by drivers to help see out their car windows, this blue liquid of sorts.
Yeah, you buy a gallon of it for like $3 at a Kragen.
It may be a breeding ground for bacteria that causes the deadly pneumonia known as Legionnaire's disease.
I never heard this before.
Uh-huh. Previous studies have tied riding in automobiles to the illness.
Well, here's a good gag then. I know it's ludicrous. So you're driving down the freeway. I don't know about you, but if most cars, the way, especially if they have good sprays for the windshield.
Yep.
If you're on the freeway doing about 70 and you hit the button to spray the windshield, it throws about half of it over the top of the car to the car behind you and God knows where. You could like contaminate half the people out there driving around.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even know how they got sick.
Right. Exactly. Ha ha. I'm going to spread Legionnaires. So this is an investigation into the fluid dispersion. First of all, who thought of this? It's just amazing, right? So an investigation of fluids dispersed by school buses in Arizona seems to have provided the answer, according to research released today by the American Society of Microbiology at its annual meeting. Could you imagine being the guy up there that's got to break this news? Breaking news. We have been studying. For some reason, we decide to do this, by the way, right? For some reason, we decide to see, you know, is it possible that the windshield washer fluid is the problem? Yep. Yep. We got together a group of 1,000 participants that would just sit in their cars and every other day spritz their windows and find out how many got Legionnaires. That is just berserk.
Yeah, it's nuts. I seriously doubt the validity of these claims.
Ugh, unbelievable. So a couple other things. Let's see here. You're talking about European, the elections and what's going on there. Draghi drop, a lot of things that have been going on, as I mentioned earlier, with in terms of the money going into, sorry about that, banging the microphone, the money going into Europe. So you have money that is going in because the idea is that Draghi has been talking about, oh my, deflation is a big risk. The euro is really high. And we're going to have to do something. So maybe they're going to do some kind of bond buying or some kind of stimulus. So money is coming into the country, which is totally wrecking the idea of bringing down the value of the euro, because as money goes in into the country, their currency goes up, right? It just goes up. So you're seeing that the euro is in the 136 to 138 range. It really hasn't been able to break down at all, even with all the comments that are going on.
Yeah.
But he's promised something in June. And this time, I think what has happened is that he gave it a few months to say, well, let's see if my comments can once again do what they do. But meanwhile, what's really fascinating is that Italian bonds are at the lowest they've been in years in terms of their yield. In other words, people have been buying them. Greece's bonds have been being bought all across Europe. We saw that with the Ukraine vote and this billionaire who came in. You know, and got most of the votes, whether he bought them or forced them or whatever it is. The Russian bonds had an unbelievable day. And Ukraine, they had their bonds had an unbelievable day. You know, investors are just, they're just so, it seems like, you know, they're just desirous of just, we'll beat it down for a while and then just ramp it right back up. Just like with the markets, you know, you have a one day move down and they just beat the crap out of a certain stock. Look at, you look at several stocks like Salesforce last week. Earnings came out. Stock was down 5.5% on the earnings the whole day. Big selling going out through the whole day. The next day, up 6%.
Hmm.
You saw Cena come out with earnings last week, and it was pretty ugly. Stock's down 8%. Next day, up 8%. It's like, what's going on? I mean, and why is it so much of a similar move in both directions?
Maybe. Yeah, that's the peculiar part.
You know, you see a 1% down on the markets, and the next day it's up 1%. Down, yeah. You know, down 0.5%, then up 0.5%. It's like they're just...
It's like the computers are regulating things in the background.
Exactly, exactly. No, that's exactly what's going on. You know, you see the move happen throughout the night, overnight, futures moving lower, and they kind of cruise lower, and then all of a sudden, 9:30, bang, slams them, you know, higher. Wait till about 10 o'clock, 10:30, after whatever news is coming out from the economy, kind of drifts lower, et cetera. 11:39, I'm not kidding about this either, 11:39 in the morning, it's always the same. It's after the European markets close, little time goes by, and all of a sudden they pop the markets again. There's a big move in either direction. Usually it's been lately up. And I think there is a lot of anticipation. I think what's happened is that a lot of investors don't want to be late. You know, they want to get in early. Look what happened in India. Take a look at EPI. Did we look at this already?
No.
Look at the symbol. So. Look at the symbol EPI. Now, Modi, who was the he's the recently elected fellow there in India. India was having all sorts of still has inflation problems. They had problems with their economy slowing down. A typical emerging market right now, but even worse than others. And then there was this commentary and this discussion about how this gentleman, if he came into office promising major overhauls with all sorts of different issues regarding the Italian economy and government and process, and, you know, if he got in, he was going to really make this thing rock. And ahead of his election, the markets came back just in an enormous manner. That's you can look at EPI. I think it's up 30% this year.
Well, if you go back to September 13 when it was down, it's almost doubled. But it had a big move from 19 to 23. with this guy's reelection or with this guy's election.
Right.
He's supposed to be, you know, he's very controversial. And if you watch the Indian TV feeds, people are yelling and screaming at each other over this guy. Supposedly he hates Muslims and is really a Hindu oriented, pro Hindu, pro business, big business guy. Who's turned, he had his, the state that he was running apparently was the most successful in terms of business productivity and profits and all the rest. And now he's set to turn all of India into a big money making machine.
Yep.
I don't know how he's going to do it.
And that's a problem, though, because, you know, the classical conflict that's in India and Pakistan, right, on the borders, Pakistan is mostly Muslim, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you may have some kind of another potential flare up. It's kind of been calm for a while, at least for a little bit of while.
Well, I think there's more technically, I believe I could be wrong about this, but technically, I believe there's more actually, there's actually more Muslims total in India than there are in Pakistan.
Really?
I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, it may be.
There's
well,
a huge population of Indians, of I'm sorry, of Muslims, Hindus, and then there's a lot of Buddhists. And India is very
well, I would think unusual. That's possibly the case because India just has just a tremendous population.
Yeah, billion.
Yeah, I think it's 1.3 population India. Let's see what the Muslim population in India is. The Muslim population in India hasn't been released. Islam by country. Oh, that's good. There we go. This is another. Back to Wikipedia. Man, I never thought I'd be using this so much. India. That's with an I, right? Let's see. India. 177 million. Is this right? Wait a minute. Muslim population. Wow. There's a 2010. China, 23 million. Wow. Egypt, 80 million. Ethiopia, 28 million. Guinea, 8.5 million. Okay. So India has 177 million. Indonesia, by the way, 204. And then we go to Pakistan, 178 million. Neck and neck.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. And the percent of the total population in India, 14%, Indonesia, 88%, and in Pakistan, or as President Obama would call it, Pakistan. Why does he say that?
I have no idea.
Pakistan, 96%. So a lot more room for growth, we could say that. Sierra Leone, 71%. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
Sierra Leone. What's the United States while we're here?
Russia's got 16 million.
America's 5 million. Vatican City. You know how much the population in Vatican City?
Probably very low.
Zero.
Ah.
Yep. The Virgin Islands has about 1,000. Yeah, United States, 2.5 million. So there you go. Turkey, 74 million. Interesting. Okay, so to kind of round us off today, let me just get back to here. I was thinking that, by the way, with India, they're already having to intervene in their currency the last couple of days because there's something going on where the currency's been moving up and hurting exporters. As a matter of fact, the Indian mark was up as much as 2%. I think it was yesterday, the day before. It came back down to only almost flat. So it's possible that the sell the news concept, right? Buy the rumor, sell the news. May be interesting to play here. And you got a lot of downside potential from where it's been, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You going to do that one?
I don't know, maybe. I got another one on there.
What's USG, the symbol for that?
EPI. There's a couple of them, but EPI is the
that's right.
Exchange-traded fund that we look at. Last thing is the US GDP this week. The second reading is coming out. Remember the first quarter last... The first quarter number, the preliminary number, was 0.1%. You remember what happened with that number with the markets? It's pretty disappointing, by the way. Remember what happened?
Yeah, no.
Went up.
Oh.
Yeah.
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 Well, everything goes up. It's because things are going up.
Yeah, things are going up, and that's why they're pretty much going up, which, all kidding aside, is the truth. I mean, I'm not saying that in a stupid way. That's what's happening.
Well, we've seen this for years now. We've seen this.
Estimates are for a negative print. Maybe that's why the U.S. bonds have been on a major rally, I'm saying here. So we saw that bonds are being bought along with stocks. Very unusual. But wondering why that is. Usually they say that the bond market and the fixed income traders are much smarter than stock traders in that they have a better feel for things and the bonds traders are usually right. We're seeing that bonds are being bought like there's a sign of problems out there somehow, but yet we're not seeing it. 10-year yield is about 2.5%, back down to close to the lows with the Fed backing off. So maybe there's something underlying this. The estimates are for a negative print. A lot of the estimates are skewed towards a negative print on GDP for the first quarter.
Mm.
So it's down to, actually, that'll be the first time in a long time, but I see some that are at the negative 0.6%. And, of course, we'll blame that on the weather, naturally.
It's always the weather.
That's the weather. So how about we get to our stocks
on this fine
Memorial Day?
You know, we still got a lot of red on here. There's 6 red items.
Mm-hmm.
Including a bunch of mine because of the guys have not performed well that are insider buyers.
Well, let's just state fact here. All but one of those are yours.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'll take the rap if it's me.
I don't even see that one of that. Oh, yes. Spring season warnings. You're Horton Short.
Yep. By the way, there was an article this week that was very positive.
You know, and by the way, I'm down 0.14% on one of the Sun Coke. Give these guys a break.
Oh, yeah.
And that shouldn't be a 20%er, by the way, because it's not a penny stock. Yeah. I don't know what that's doing on there.
You know what? I got to talk to that guy. There you go. Gone. There was an interesting article that was very positive. I thought I caught my eye on Barron's this week on global brass and copper holdings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're out of that. You were stopped out of that after it went up and then came back a bit. But that was I thought that was interesting. I just want to throw that your way as a possibility of something you may want to look at. So just going through this, and by the way, this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. This is not a recommendation. This is nothing more than a game that we play. And follow along with your funness, not with your pocket, unless you do a very proper amount of research on your own or with a professional. John C. Dvorak, Andrew Horowitz, or Horowitz and Company clients may own some of these that will be duly noted. Dicom Industries up 6%. Again, you got a couple of these. You've had these where they kind of stick around for a long time. You know, this is from the beginning of this year.
Yeah, no, I know. I managed to always find one like that. It stays. It just kind of, it almost gets to, some of it kind of keeps moving up, and then some of it's just kind of dead money after it makes just a little bit of, you know, it goes up a little bit and then stops.
Yep. But that's good. I mean, your things are not as volatile. Mine are definitely more for the game here. I pick more of the volatile potential for big movers, you know? But your DaVita is finally in the green, which is something that I was wondering what was going on there. Remember that? I was like, why is this not happening?
Yeah,
the short on Cena came out with earnings. Like I said, they were down another 8%. We're up 31% on the short of Cena that was taken out in the beginning or mid-March. Roost Hospitality is back in the green again. Beef prices keep on moving up, by the way. Agco a little bit, just a little bit down. Destination XL Group is just right on the cusp. Navistar International on the buy side, which is trucking, which probably has a lot to do with China, down 4%. Chipotle is stopped out, up 6%. We're going to roll that back in again, by the way. We're going to reload that position on the short again.
Mm.
Went down to about 479, I think it was. And then just crept up again, you know, the same thing as usual. You see that up, disappointment. We know.
So we had a conversation at the dinner table about Chipotle.
Yeah.
With everybody.
Yeah.
And it was like everyone concluded that why, especially in San Francisco, which has a lot of real, you know, Mexican restaurants that are quite good, especially the ones that provide the genuine mission burrito,
ooh,
which is the big giant one. And they're delicious. So we wonder why anybody in their right mind would go to Chipotle because the food is tasteless.
And was there a realization of something or some kind of a consensus?
No, nobody came up with anything that explained it. It's just like they're good marketing people, I guess, and like maybe people don't want real Mexican food.
Well, maybe let me throw this out at you. Maybe. Just maybe. I'm not saying this is true. I'm just throwing this out. Maybe there's some kind of an idea that Mexican restaurants maybe are not the cleanest because one of the things that Chipotle does is they are all
this
about...
Now, what you've just said is something that did come up in the conversation.
Oh.
My son's boss had this same assertion that Mexican restaurants weren't clean. Now, my experience with most of the small taquerias and Mexican restaurants, they're not only extremely clean, but they have an open kitchen. So you can literally watch them do their own thing as opposed to these places with stuff going on in the back. So
yeah.
That argument, I think, comes out of some weird perception, a preconceived notion, because if anyone's actually been to these places, a good Mexican restaurant, I mean, half the time they don't have a hidden kitchen. It's right there. You can see how clean they are by just looking.
Okay, well, we'll chalk that up to just an idea and ignorance, possibly. The other thing is Chipotle talks about, and they have a lot of discussion about how it's healthy food. You know, it's you know, the whole new age millennia thing where, you know.
It's hard.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're not going to, you know. Oh, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday with the whole thing about, oh, I don't understand why they have to poke bunny rabbit's eyes out to see if mascara works or some weird stuff like that. And I'm thinking, well, okay. And, you know, I don't eat any meat that is treated, you know, poorly. I'm like, okay, do you eat fish? Yes. I said, you know what? The other day I was in a fish place, honestly, and they were filleting it, and they took a live fish and beat the crap out of it with a bat to kill it.
Yeah, Chinese tend to do that.
And I'm like, oh, how's that? Well, you know, the fish don't really have feelings. You know, they have very small brains and all that. But a lamb, yeah. I'm like, really? Really? I'm sure I don't care how small the fish's brain is. When it's getting bashed to death, it probably is not happy. But that's just me.
I would assume is not happy. I don't know why they just don't chop the head off.
Just chop the head off. Maybe because if you chop the head off, then you see the tail work and it's not fun. But... You know, but the fact is that, you know, unfortunately for all those that want to be kind to animals, I got all that. We are the top of the food chain, though, unless we're in the water and the big great white shark. But otherwise, we're pretty much the top of the food chain, right? And it's
we're up there, that's for sure.
We're up there.
Top five.
Right, depends on where you are. In my house, I'm the top. In Yellowstone, it's the grizzly. So, you know, okay, depends on where you are. So anyway, maybe that's some of it. But I don't know why else. Is it just maybe because of the fact that people finally, I guess, would be all about because it's, you know, perceived to be better because the commercials tell you it is? And I also think that in the old days when you and I were watching commercials, we realized it was a commercial. And new days, it's like a mini episode of something in these commercials. And people buy into what they say because the commercial said so.
Maybe. Mm. All I know is that it's very successful. And now we have the other issue with Panera.
Horrid.
She drives down from Washington on occasion, and she's a big fan of Panera.
What possibly is she a fan of?
Well, she's a fan of not going to a fast food place when she has to pull over to get something to eat. And she says Panera's not great, but it's better than McDonald's and Jack in the Box and Burger King.
First of all, better than Jack in the Box is fighting words. Let's just say that. Their taco is so disgusting, it's good.
That taco, that Jack in the Box taco is a joke.
It's late night kind of.
No, a lot of people swear by the Jack in the Box taco.
Yeah, no, it's just, seriously, it's so disgusting that it's good.
Yeah, I know. It's a greasy mess. Yeah. I know. I know people that just are addicted to them.
Yeah. but I guess I could see that, and you know, the perception that there's fresh stuff. But you know what? Their soups taste all canned to me, or at least jarred or something. I know it's supposed to be fresh, but they're kind of gross. Maybe it's the free Wi-Fi that gets everybody all the time.
I don't know.
I'm not a big fan of Starbucks either. I think their coffee's disgusting.
No, I don't like Starbucks at all. I mean, it's like the blandest. All we're dealing with here with all these places is bland. Bland coffee, bland sandwiches, and bland Mexican food, which is a non sequitur kind of thing or a contradiction. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense that you. I don't know how you make Mexican food if you're doing anything right. Bland, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I put a lot of sauces, hot sauce on it to just juice it up. But anyway, continuing on with our stocks, D.R. Horton. I am still of the mindset that there's a big problem in the housing area. Meanwhile, of course, on Friday and Thursday, there were some good numbers, better numbers than expected. Still a downturn in the housing area, but better than expected for new housing. Weibo, owned, by the way, to a degree by a few different companies, and Sina being one of them, came out with their earnings and plopped and up 9.5%.
Acorn, yeah, on the short.
Yep, on the short. On the buy side, the Acorn, I mentioned that they had some really good stuff with that M&A that they're doing and buying a company, and they have a bunch of good drugs that are being used in various different pharmaceuticals for eyes, et cetera. The transaction was accretive and dropped down a little bit and then came back nicely. This week I'm saying, okay, we're back into a couple of shorts here. It's been a bit of a theme of mine, it looks like. How many buys do I have? One?
One.
Yeah, I think it's one.
One.
Yep, one whole buy.
You're short on everything, and even though the market's doing well.
Yep. These aren't doing badly, considering. I mean, one short's not good. Herbalife, there's a lot of potential renewed chatter that I'm seeing floating around again about Herbalife. And, you know, this still has not been resolved. The only caveat on shorting Herbalife is that this company's tricky, which, by the way, also leads me to believe that it's an interesting short. But they may come out with, like, a huge share buyback, boost the dividend, maybe even potentially take the company private to get the hell out of the potential spotlight with all this multi-level marketing deal, you know?
Yeah.
And that just leads me to believe, by the way, that they are a problem. Like, if they weren't doing anything and just let this whole thing go to a degree and didn't fight back as strongly, it would be almost like, okay, let it all just die a death, and nobody's talking about it, you know? But this whole controversy and the way that they're reacting to it makes me believe that there's just more to this than meets the eye. So, And I'm going back to shorting Chipotle because, as you say, bland and food costs up. And they did a nice little recovery. They're getting very close. They have a little way to go on the upside, but getting very close to resistance here from where the sell-off started. So the recovery is the excess sell-off after the earnings now, and they're kind of towards the bottom of that point. So I'm going to short Chipotle again. We'll do that once again like we did hopefully with like Fannie Mae, how nicely that worked out. What would you like to put on here, sir?
I haven't got anything really great, but I do have. I would like to take a shot at BANC
Bank. Is that bank BANC?
Put it over here. Bank of California, essentially.
BANC. Okay, and you're gonna go long.
Yeah.
Okay, and is this another situation with insider buying or what's it?
Not really. There is some insider buying, but it really is minor, and it's not even. It's not even anything worth anything in terms of the. It's not. No, I'm not doing it because the inside. I like the chart.
Okay.
Tell me what you think.
Let me get there. Bank. What about EPI? What we're talking about this? You gonna think about that?
Yeah, I was looking at it. I don't know. I'm not gonna do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the overseas stuff. If you haven't noticed over the years we've been doing this show, I'm not a big, I don't have any confidence in foreign stocks or investments. So, in the olden days when I used to invest in stuff like it was just never worked out.
It looks like the Bank of California issued about $110 million of a secondary on May 16th, which is probably the reason why the stock came down over that period from about 12 to 10, which is a pretty good drop there. Over the last several weeks, we've topped out about 14, went to 12, broke the 12. Now it's on support, although it's got the support right here, this $10 support level, approximately.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
You break down, though, you're going probably straight to 8 or 8.50.
Well, then I'll be out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to take much.
And it's not going to cost you really anything.
No.
Nothing at all.
So I have one other bank I want to put on here.
Yeah, what's that?
Umpqua.
Oh, UMPQ, is it?
UMPQ.
Yeah, that's it. Umpqua.
This is a bank. Here's what I'm thinking on this one. This is one of the greatest banks in the West Coast. In fact, when they answer the phone, they say, "Welcome to Umpqua, the world's greatest bank."
Huh.
And they only have outlets. Mostly they were in the Pacific Northwest, named after an Indian tribe. And now they've got places. They've got California. They've got, they have a Walnut Creek office, and there's one in Petaluma. And they're starting kind of an expansion thing. I think they're building themselves up to be sold out.
Well, here's something interesting. This is coming up. This is new. They declared a fiscal year 2013 net earnings accessible to common investors of 87 cents for each diluted common share, or $97.5 million, versus net earnings accessible, whatever that means, is accessible thing. I never understand what that is, but accessible of 90 cents. So they missed by 3 cents and about $5 million on revenue. 2012. Wait a minute. 2012. What? This is a 2014 article. Why are they talking about 2012?
It may not be a 2014 article. A lot of these websites, they put the current current dates instead of the date of the time of writing. It's a huge problem with doing research online. That's what I'm guessing it is.
Wow, that would be really messed up. Let me see if there's something down here. July 14th, April 14th, March 12th. Wow, that's terrible. That's terrible.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz.
Here it is, Umpqua Holdings Management to meet with J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
That's a buyout, kind of a hint.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're setting themselves to be sold, which is, unfortunately, we're moving our loan banking for our houses, or we're pushing over to Umpqua because Umpqua's got a very progressive loan program. You can actually get loans, unlike these other operations, which don't want to give any money to anybody.
Right.
And, of course, it would be disappointing to end up with the J.P. Morgan Chase, of all people, one of the worst banks of the world, buying them.
Right. Doesn't seem to bother any of the investors, though.
No,
J.P. Morgan, not at all. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on this fine Memorial Day. Hopefully you enjoyed the early edition of DH Unplugged. Check out all the different things at the site over at DH Unplugged. Of course, you could find out more about Stanford Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate Program over on DH Unplugged. We'll have some information there. And, of course, follow me at my handle, Andrew Horowitz, or The Real Dvorak on Twitter. And we'll see you again next week.
Okay. Right. See you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.